del Barcelona, Ousmane Dembélé.
Müller going for his hat trick and he's got it.
Dybala, there's a goal.
Manchester City is still alive here. Aguero.
Hello and welcome to Radio Offside Podcast. I'm Ali and I'm here with a special guest who we have been trying very hard to bring on our podcast for a while. And he's finally here. Let me introduce Andrew Gaffney to all of you. Andrew is a freelance writer focused on Spanish football and his voice has been featured on various publications. Andrew, we are very happy to have you here with us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here as well. I apologize for the delay in my appearance.
Thank you. No problem at all. We are just very happy to finally have you here. Andrew, you're living in Valencia, Spain. First, I want to know how is the COVID-19 situation is in Spain right now? From what I could gather, apparently the situation in Valencia did not get as bad as it was in Madrid. Am I right about that?
Yeah, well, I think the issue with like many countries that have had severe outbreaks in certain cities is based on the virus getting into care homes. And Valencia was one of the ones which didn't have that, which obviously, unfortunately, Madrid did, which increased the numbers and created this huge spike. But Valencia in general has been, again, as much as nobody likes to sort of downplay numbers and say any deaths are okay, it's been, for the size of the region, we have been relatively lucky, or at least fortunate, in that there hasn't been the same level of outbreak that we're seeing in Madrid.
Yesterday on May 6th, players returned to their camp and got tested for COVID-19. La Liga is hoping to start resuming the league behind closed doors mid-June in about a month. What is public's opinion about that in Spain? I mean, that means a lot of money spent on regular COVID-19 tests for players and staff, while many of people who are in need of a test may face a problem to get one.
I don't know. It's very difficult, and I wouldn't want to sort of try and become a spokesperson for the public, because when the public are not outside and you're not really mixing and the people you see, as much as we're maybe all having a short conversation, which we shouldn't be doing, at least not this week, it's next week that we're allowed to talk. Football has been sort of very secondary. So you base it on newspaper headlines. And again, I'm not sure how much of that is genuine public reception, I suppose, like any other country where there have been limited tests or a lack of equipment and funding to ensure that the right people are tested, especially frontline workers, that suddenly there's a huge amount of tests available for footballers, which again, it's not their fault. Obviously, this is based on their brand, their clubs, and obviously the intention of financial backers, which paid for a product. So I don't know if there's necessarily, from what I've seen in personal experience, been a backlash, but I would imagine there is a slight, I wouldn't go as far as distrust, but a slight unease about the fact that suddenly for certain situations there's no tests. And then for these footballers who a lot of them, again, which we'll get into, are not overly excited by the idea of going back to work, that they have suddenly got all these tests immediately available without any issues. But again, it's the nature of the beast, isn't it? We all know that, same as we've seen a lot of hosts of celebrities manage to get tests straight away. If you're in a business or in an industry which requires you to go back to work, well, suddenly those means become available.
Yeah, so you mentioned it. What's the position of Footballers Union, AFE? I mean, I read that apparently some of the players are doubtful if resuming the games in these situations is a good idea. Rafael Harke of Cadiz said explicitly that he's not going to play until there is a vaccine for COVID-19. And I mean, just think about it. What if one of the players gets COVID-19 and start a legal campaign against La Liga? Even if La Liga wins such a lawsuit, wouldn't it be a very bad PR for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think any industry which is attempting to go back to this new normal, obviously, we'll all get bored of calling things the new normal, but and it'll soon become the normal. But there's obviously a huge risk, and I think the chairman of the AFE, David Agantho, has already said that when it comes to money and health, there's no debate, which obviously means that the people who are making decisions have put money ahead of people's health. There's a huge risk there. Obviously, you need to think of the players' well-being. They're going to be taken away from their families for large periods of time to try and get these matches done. They're going to try and squeeze in as many matches as possible because obviously they're working their own deadline. And there's also a lot of pushback from the Players Association about the fact that if one player was to test positive, that the whole squad wouldn't be put under self-isolation, that they would basically just isolate that one player and then carry on. And that seems... it's difficult because I think when you bring something back, you sort of... Obviously, a lot of people just want to get it done. And as we've seen from other various leagues, apart from obviously the French League and with respect to some smaller leagues that have already decided how their season's going to end, big leagues like La Liga and the Premier League and obviously the Bundesliga have weighed up the pros and cons of suspending the season or cancelling the season or null and voiding it. And they obviously feel that getting the games done, even if it's in a short period of time, even if it's in less than ideal circumstances, you also need to think that Spain, especially in June and July, is extremely hot. I would not envy any of those players, despite how much they earn, wanting to play 90-minute matches and possibly three, well, I'd imagine it has to be three matches a week. There's a huge risk involved, and I don't think anybody is going to be truly happy at the end of it, but they're obviously hoping that, again, this is all subject to change, like any of us phases that are in different parts of the country. In Spain, we've got, I think, three or four phases at the moment. The footballers run their own specific one, which is hoping that everything goes well. Obviously, there was a spike of cases. I think it's impossible to continue, but this is why they're using this month as essentially a free hit. I don't think there's been any confirmed cases that at least I've read. Barcelona were the first team to announce that nobody has got it from their first team squad. But the tests are taking place over this week, obviously individual training, and then I'd imagine the week after. Again, these are all very flexible timescales. We go to the sort of group training, and you would hope that by the time we reach the beginning of June, hopefully the situation in the country is a lot better as well, not just the little pocket of footballers. And then they will say, well, the risk is extremely reduced. You would have to be really unlucky or somebody contracted the virus. You've done something wrong rather than the system being wrong. But yeah, there's definitely a moral aspect, which I think is being tested and will be tested. And you imagine, you know, God forbid, and I don't wish this on anybody, but imagine Lionel Messi test positive. Do you think Barcelona are going to say, well, you know what, we'll lose Messi for 2 weeks while he self-isolates and that could cost them a league? Or are they going to say, well, we're not playing until he's back because it's not our fault, you made us play? So, yeah, I don't know. I suppose there'll be lawyers, everybody going through any potential agreement with a fine-tooth comb. And there has to be some sort of middle ground because, like you said, there's definitely a pushback at the moment. And you also think that these families are going to be denied seeing their loved ones for the best part of a month. And I don't know. I mean, like I say, it's trying to make the best of a worse situation, but there is huge dangers with it, which obviously the powers that be at the moment feel they're worth taking.
Yeah, and I read that La Liga decided to not announce name of the players who get tested positive for COVID-19. And I think that that's because they want to like protect the reputation of the player or something like that. But then I don't know how that works because, I mean, media would know if someone is not showing up, if someone is isolated, they would know that like something is going on, right? So I don't know how they're planning to manage that.
It's tricky again because you feel that everybody has the right to privacy, same as it feels like age ago now, but it was only a few months ago when there was rumors of Gareth Bale insisting that Real Madrid not disclose if he was injured or what his injury was because they had no right to publicize it. And that, it would basically be up to him to decide if he wanted to say, look, I've got a slight hamstring injury or whatever. And again, I mean, speaking of someone obviously based in Valencia, when Atalanta came over, it felt like such a unnecessary risk. And yeah, it was played behind closed doors, but you allowed all those people to come over, to travel. Everybody, and again, that it's not related purely to the Italian fans, because there was lots of Valencia fans that also turned up outside the stadium. It just seemed like such a dangerous thing to do. And then obviously we've had Valencia players test positive, a lot of them. And then I think it was Alaves that they played the following week, and a lot of their players came back and tested positive. And it's so easy, as we know from, like, again, not comparing it, but I mean comparing how it spreads, the common flu. If you've got the flu and someone in your household has got, if you don't have the flu and someone has it, you know you're going to get it by the end of the week, yeah. And then you're going to spread it to a workmate. So I don't know. It just seems, I suppose it's scary in a way, because we're basically playing with science and hoping that the odds and the law of averages means that everyone will get through okay. If we're unlucky, there might just be one player. But if you don't announce who it was, and you can just say, well, he was injured. And it's true, you know, you imagine a lot of these players, while they've been doing their own training exercises, and I imagine given to them by the club, it's very different to have basically had a mini pre-season in the middle of a season to then go back. Muscle strains and all these things are going to be extremely common, especially if you're being asked to play a lot of games in a short period of time. I don't know. I think whatever happens in any of the big seasons, there's going to be an asterisk next to it. Not to dismiss the quality or whoever wins or whoever gets relegated, but it's just going to be an abnormality to what we're all used to seeing.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, there is no obvious answer to this problem. Like, as you said, like, League One canceled the whole league, but now Lyon is, like, suing the league, is planning to sue the league because they didn't get any European spot for either Europa League or Champions League, and I don't know how that's going to end, so... It's understandable, yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely not going to claim to be an expert on League One because my knowledge is extremely limited. But I'm sure I read somewhere that they was allowed to do this, or it was an easy decision, because in their rules, there is sort of, for extreme circumstances, that if a league is cancelled, well, then the current standings are final. So that's where obviously like the Premier League and the Liga, and I won't speak for every other league because I don't know. They don't have that protocol in place. So essentially, this is all brand new, and anything they decide is open to legal action because no one's agreed to it, which, again, makes everything different. And we'll have to see, for example, if there are clubs that are in the relegation zone now that go on such an incredible run and escape, and the teams that drop down in there say, well, how's that fair? Because they had this player who was injured, and they would have probably struggled. Now they've got him back, and he's scored, I don't know, 10 goals, and we've lost. This isn't fair. So I don't know. I would imagine there has to be something signed by the leagues to essentially say, well, whatever happens in this sort of second part of the season, which is extremely rushed, stands, and, you know, you're either lucky or you're unlucky if it comes to injuries or certain players being back. As a Spurs fan, personally, it's great because we've had such a huge injury crisis, and now when we come back, we've got everyone ready. And it's like, oh, maybe we'll do all right this year in the end, but... Yeah, it's strange to really focus on football. It really is, on a personal level, just because Spurs have been terrible. That also doesn't inspire my confidence to watch more football. But it would be nice to see the players that you love and watch them play. And like I say, you just hope that there isn't any of these incidences, like say, of someone testing positive or a serious injury, and that the season, as normal as it can finish, does finish.
So in the beginning of the pandemic, each club was deciding how to cope with the financial problems. Barcelona had a lot of problems. First, there were rumors that players don't want to accept the wage cut. Then the club announced that they are going to put some of the staff on furlough. And then after that, players accepted a 70% wage cut. And all of this was happening while Real Madrid asked their players only a 10 to 20% wage cut. So where is the financial problem in the Barcelona coming from? I mean, why do they have so many problems? Why Real Madrid doesn't have?
Well, the financial problems at Barcelona are a long document. Unfortunately, for their fans, should we say, invested heavily in very big contracts for aging players who not necessarily mean that they're not good enough, but that they shouldn't be earning the money they're earning. And then you have the issue. Anyone who's played, even like Football Manager, for example, you know the difficulty of once you sign a 28 or 29-year-old to a huge contract, that no other club is going to take on that wage. You're going to be responsible for it. And Barcelona have been pretty poor when it comes to signing players and pretty poor when it comes to selling players and trying to get the most money out of them. So the issues in terms of finances was always going to hit them harder, because whilst they make a lot of money, they spend a lot of money, and the expenditure is huge for a club their size. And the majority of that is on wages. I'm pretty sure it's the highest ratio of turnover to wages in the league. So, yeah, and in terms of the actual, shall we say, presidential reign of Bartomeu, it's never been smooth sailing, apart from when they're winning everything. And when they don't, then the sort of holes in their bucket get exposed. And it was a very underhand and sneaky tactic to basically pull the rug from under the players' feet and say, well, we're making you take a wage cut, and not giving them a chance. Because it felt like PR to say, well, look, we're going to reduce their wages. But they didn't come and say we wanted to do it, which was not true, because they were in negotiations to do a pay cut. But they, like a lot of high earners, wanted to make sure that that money was going to the right places. There was no issue. Obviously, if you're earning £200,000 a week, you're not going to complain when there's like the lady in the canteen's lost a job. You're going to make sure that, well, I want to top up her wage so we don't have to use as much. And that was the difference, I think, for a club which professes itself as mesquite club, which is more than a club. They've embarrassed themselves more than showered themselves in praise, because they don't seem to know. And I'm sure later on we'll get into PR companies in Barcelona, which was obviously a big talk before the coronavirus. But Real Madrid, by the opposite margin, they did everything correctly in terms of not all their players. There was a good chunk of their players, like Ramos, Cisco, I think Carvajal, all donated either to buy masks or to contribute into fundraisers. They've been about opened up to be a warehouse and a distribution center for sanitary products and equipment. Whereas Barcelona has been embroiled in a civil war with the board of directors, with resignations and demotions and accusations of underhand tactics to try and devalue potential presidential candidates. And it's not a good look. It's not a good look for a club which is supposed to be this, like they say, mesquite club, but it's been more of a mess of a club than a mesquite.
So what do you think about the future of Bartomeu? Do you think he can stay another year, or is he going to be out soon?
It's difficult to say, and I think that's just because there's so much there's a lack of clarity of what's going to happen next season or when next season's going to begin. Because whilst the governing bodies are rushing to find a solution to this year, no one really knows if the players are finishing at the end of July, possibly early August, then you can't start a new season at the beginning or the middle of August or even the end of August. Those players are going to want to have a break. With the World Cup in 2022, we're getting so lost with all these changes of venue. I'm pretty sure it's 2022, which is in Qatar. That is obviously going to be a Winter World Cup. So then you think, well, does this sort of allow everyone to have a big, long sort of pre-season break up until the winter months? So in terms of his position, I think it depends on two factors. One, well, maybe three. One is the success of Barcelona, because when Barcelona is successful, fans usually are less volatile in terms of wanting change. We saw that last season in the summer, before Neymar was mentioned, there was a lot of Bartomeu out and Valverde out. The fans were determined to have a huge change. They wanted him to go. And then when the Neymar news came around, suddenly all the attention went to, oh, what if we get Neymar back? And I don't want to say it was done deliberately and that there wasn't moves, because it's well documented by a lot of people, a lot of reputable people and reputable sources, that they did try and organize a deal. But it diverted the attention away from things that he's not handled well. And I would imagine if the season doesn't end particularly well, whether it's, we have no idea the Champions League, obviously we're still talking about La Liga, I have no idea how you fit in a European knockout fixture, which is quote unquote fair for everybody. So it depends primarily on Barcelona's success, then transfers, but you would imagine that's probably almost null and void because the income is going to be so low that they're going to have to cut their losses on a lot of big earners. How much of that kitty is going to be available to spend on players? And then someone like a PSG, why would they sell Neymar on the cheap if they don't have to? They've got untold resources. So they could basically say, well, look, we're not going to, you might only have 30 or 40 million to spend on Neymar, but we're not going to sell him for that price. And then the other thing is whether fans can have that unity and see it through. He's obviously already faced a challenge by the fans who wanted a vote of confidence, and he won that, again, because the results changed. And fans, not in a condescending way, but we just want things to go our way. And if our team's winning, well, we don't want to change everything, keep it the same. But the problem is when your window of opportunity goes, I would imagine that he's probably, due to the fact that he's managed to get rid of or at least push aside the ones that were opposing his leadership inside his own party, which, again, one of them was Amélie Roussin, who was his number two guy, who everyone expected him to be the person that Bartomeu was going to promote as saying, this is the guy who should replace me. And he came out to be the fiercest rival to him and saying, look, he's not doing things right. He doesn't respect the club. So I don't, it's difficult to tell. I think it depends on the success on the pitch or lack of it. If there's a transfer which is possible, which can get fans excited enough to all ignore it up until the start of next season. And then it's whether there's the unity amongst fans and season ticket holders to say, do we want to wait an extra year and then just pick somebody else? Or is it so necessary that we push him out? And I have no idea of the repercussions of trying to overhaul that, how much it would cost. There's a lot of factors, but I would guess that he'll probably see out his final year by a huge disaster on the field or off the field again.
Yeah, I was reading that apparently they have a deal in place to bring in Pjanic and then just let Arthur Melo go to Juventus with no money exchange. And I don't know what you think, but if I was a Barca fan, I would be furious. Like bringing in a midfielder who's in the ending days of his career and then letting someone like Arthur to go. I don't know. I feel that that's not a good deal for Barca.
Yeah, again, the natural reaction is always to dismiss these stories of saying it's so ridiculous, it can't make sense. But then you look at their previous workings and you think, well, maybe they could be that stupid. But Atomelo is one of those ones. It's an unusual player. He's obviously got all the potential in the world. When you see him line up for Brazil, he seems fully fit, an engine. He runs all day, but he seems to struggle playing regular football, three matches in a week. He seems to pick up little knocks and it takes him a long time to recover. But no, you shouldn't be replacing people like him. Same as like Nelson Semedo. And Nelson Semedo, he has a group of fans which absolutely adore him. And they don't see his, should we say, weaknesses. And there are weaknesses to his game. But he's a young player. He's got that ability to get up and down the wing, similar to a Jordi Alba on the other side. You should be trying to iron out his mistakes, not trying to replace him. And like you said, Pjanic, I don't think he's definitely not a bad player. I'm not going to try and claim that I've seen a lot of Juventus apart from the Champions League because I don't really watch Serie A. But it's not a player you would swap. You can understand like another young talent, you say, well, all right. But then you let like Coutinho, they're trying to get rid of Coutinho, but then they want silly money. And they're delaying and delaying and saying, well, we want 100 million. And now you're going to be lucky to get half of that, especially after this crisis, just shows that there's a disconnect of what the reality is and what Barcelona believe they can get for their players. And they've just overpaid, unfortunately, on many. Coutinho is a prime example, same as Ousmane Dembele. Both very, very good players, but they were never worth what they paid. And in the case of Coutinho, it will never be what they paid. And Ousmane Dembele is still got time on his side, but I mean, the poor guy's suffered injury after injury, and that's not going to entice somebody to splash out 100 million on a right winger who might be world class one day. But if he can't stay fit, as Real Madrid will testify to Gareth Bale, but Gareth Bale has again coincided with a lot of trophies for Real Madrid. I'm not sure Ousmane Dembele, when he is fit, can have that same impact as a Gareth Bale did when he was at Real Madrid, even though he was suffering with a lot of injuries. It's difficult. I think there's a lot of transfer rumours which probably aren't true. Probably hard pressed to find somebody who is not being linked with a move away from Barcelona, apart from Lionel Messi and probably Luis Suarez. Everyone else has been linked with a potential swap or cash and player deal. I don't know how realistic that's going to be. I suppose there's a lot of guesswork of what the financial situation is of certain clubs come the summer. But if everybody's taking a hit, you'd imagine that there's still going to be transfer fees. They're just going to be a lot lower than what we've seen in previous years.
Would you agree with me that both Real Madrid and Barcelona had a weak season, but the difference is that it appears that Real is trying to rebuild their squad while Barca is just doing nothing? I mean, I don't know. Is that me being a Real Madrid fan, or is there some reality in it?
I would say that it's very difficult for anybody, Real Madrid fan or otherwise, to criticize the club after their European success, which still baffles me to this day. I know they've got the pedigree, the experience, but some of those things you think no other team could have done that. It was either pure luck or inspiration from one player in a key moment. And
no, it's something that only we could do.
Well, I had this slight conversation with a Barcelona fan recently, and they were saying, well, what was the player they said that? Something like, oh, if Gareth Bale had gone to Manchester United when Ronaldo was there with Ferguson, that they would have had the same success as they had at Real Madrid. And I said, I don't think so. I don't think you can replicate that. It was whether it's the club, whether it was the group of players, whether it was the constant change in managers, which, as much as everyone criticizes, seems to help a club like Real Madrid, because it never means anyone gets comfortable or everyone expects, well, it's my favorite, so I'll play every week. But I think there's definitely been a drop-off in quality for both La Liga giants, should we say. Atletico Madrid as well, I think they've obviously fallen off a little bit. They're constantly in rebuild mode with Diego Simeone. Yes. And he's used to that, but I mean, it makes it difficult for any project long-term at Atletico Madrid to be sustainable. Real Madrid obviously do have generally a large turnover of players. That's been reduced recently, and maybe that's why they've had that success, because it's allowed the chemistry to build. I think Real Madrid, the one thing they did really well is they invested in youngsters. They obviously paid probably over the odds for a lot of them. But again, if you can afford it, if you amass the best young talents from Brazil and Spain, then all you need is one or two of them to come through, and then you mix them in with your Galacticos, and you've got a really good team. Barcelona, in contrast, have almost been reluctant to let go of the past. That mega team from Pep Guardiola never got blown up. It's just been kept there. And it's not the same team that it was under Pep Guardiola. It's the same names, but then they can't do the same functions. There's a lot of those players that they can produce one-off games where they look amazing, but they can't perform week in, week out, just because the toll on the body of basically playing Pep Guardiola's style of football, it grains on you, and it tires you, and it wears you out. And I think that's where you look at Barcelona, and there's a lot of old players there. There's a lot of players that, would you say, are justifying their wages. And I think the only one they've got semi-right is Rakitic, that they've not given him a new deal when he asked for one. But then Jordi Alba's had semi-recently a new deal. Messi seems to get a new deal every year or every 2 years. Suarez is another one, Busquets, Pique. These are players that, with the greatest respect, apart from Messi, because you can't replace him, the others should be as an alternative off the bench to be teaching the next young talent to come through. And whereas, like you say, Real Madrid have amassed this group of talented youngsters from all over the world, Barcelona seem to have sold all their talented youngsters to anyone who would pay a decent fee. And the irony will probably be that in 3-4 years' time, they're going to be paying 60-70 million to bring one of them back. And you think, well, why did you not just keep hold of him? Why did you not let him come through the ranks? He loves the club. He's played there since he was 13 or 14. But if you sell him to a Bundesliga side and he suddenly explodes onto the scene and scores 25, 30 goals, I mean, look at like Luka Jovic, obviously, at your club Real Madrid. One good season can see you get a huge move. And I don't understand why a team like Barcelona, which is so limited in terms... Ricky Puig, who's struggling to get game time anytime. And it might be too young, but he should be getting some minutes. He should be made to feel you're part of our future. We're not going to play you every week, but we're going to bring you on for 20 minutes against tired legs. Show what you can do. Carlos Alenia has obviously gone to Real Betis. But these are the guys that they should be getting chances. They shouldn't be behind the Arturo Vidals, with the great respect to Arturo Vidal, who's done a good job at Barcelona. But you shouldn't be signing players like that. You shouldn't be playing Busquets week in, week out. You shouldn't be playing Rakitic at all if you plan to sell him. Gerard Pique has been someone who's gone against the grain because defenders sort of tend to peak a bit later. But he shouldn't be forced to play much. He should be saved like Iniesta was and Xavi was in their final couple of seasons and bring him out for the big games when you need that leader on the pitch. But they're constantly depending on their old guard, and that doesn't bode well for the future. And then you've got people like Marc-André Ter Stegen, who's in contract talks, and that seems to have hit a impasse. And you can't let someone as talented as Ter Stegen feel undervalued and underrated and leave, because who's going to replace him in goal? Who is their second choice goalkeeper? I mean, I know it's Neto, but you don't think he is going to be as good, because he isn't as good. And that's no disrespect to Neto. It's just there's a different level, and there's no one coming through the academy. You say, well, this guy looks good enough. No, you need to reward the right players with the right deals. And as painful as it might be, you need to sort of close the door on the past and build towards a new Super Barcelona team and not hang on to these old memories of what used to be.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in Setien because they thought that he's going to give more time to their youngsters. But today, actually, I was reading on Twitter. I mean, I don't know how reliable it is, but I was reading that his favorite midline for right now is Rakitic, Busquets, and De Jong. And I was like, so didn't you bring this guy so guys like Ricky Puig could have more time? And yeah, it.
Well, I think part of the reality for some Barcelona fans, and it's probably true of all clubs, especially again, not meaning it in a nasty way towards Real Madrid, but there's not many youngsters that come through from the academy at Real Madrid all through their career and make it in the first team. There's very few. There are players that come through the academy, go elsewhere, and then come back and make it. But there's not many that you have a personal attachment to. Whereas I think for Barcelona fans, there has to be a level of understanding that maybe the era of the Busquets and Xavi and Iniestas and Pique was a bit like Manchester United's class of 92. It's a rarity. You're not going to get that again. You can't expect every young player that comes through is going to be that level of talent or is going to be ready at the same time. Some might take till the 25 before they suddenly accept that responsibility. We saw, obviously, Marcus Llorente went to Atletico Madrid from Real Madrid. He looked really good out on loan. I think it was it Alaves that he played for one season on loan? And he looked incredible. Like one of the best defensive midfielders in the league, struggled at Real Madrid. You could see he was nervous when he came on. He didn't feel confident on the ball. He made a lot of silly mistakes. Gone to Atletico Madrid, and he's still maybe not established himself there. But, you know, it takes players different variants of time. Not everyone breaks through at like a Messi or Ronaldo or Cristiano. We're talking at 18, 19 and think, wow, this guy is born to play. He's ready to mix it up. And I think that there needs to be patience, but there's also, I mean, I have many arguments with Barcelona fans, well, many arguments with many people, but Barcelona fans is their constant hatred towards Valverde. And it was like, well, Valverde's there just to get the best out of what he's got. He's maybe not the best tactician, is maybe not the best identifying a super target to break into the team, but he will get the maximum out of what he's got. And if he's picking these players, it's because people behind them are not either good enough or there's influence from the club to say, well, you need to play this one a bit more because we're paying him a lot more wages. And that is an issue, I think, with a lot of academy players, that the reason why they've left is because they feel like the ceiling to the first team is so high because their wages are so low in comparison to other ones. And a lot of them have gone from one academy to another academy, and it's purely for money, purely for a chance to get football. And in Barcelona, if you're not being paid well, and there's no chance or very little chance of breaking into the first team, why would you stay around? Even if you love Barcelona for your own career, you've got to leave to come back. And maybe the potential positive of a financial crisis at Barcelona will be that they have to turn to their academy and give some of these young talents a chance to sink or swim, not just assume they're all going to sink, because we've seen that it take different times. But, you know, even like a Pedro, Pedro's one of them players that I think is massively underrated when people talk about big players for Barcelona. He's got a lot of big goals and a lot of big games. But, you know, he's not a flashy player in terms of his name. He's not a flashy player in terms of his reputation. But he's someone who can fill out a squad. And he filled out Barcelona's squad incredibly well. He was talented, either starting in the 11 or off the bench. And you don't see many academy players at Barcelona now that you say, I trust him if he comes out. Obviously, Ansu Fati came on, again, majorly because there was no one else available because they had so many injuries. But that's an example of, look, if you give a young, hungry kid a chance, is he any worse than some of the players they've signed? If they'd have looked at him and said, well, look, this guy's going to come through in a couple of years. We don't need to buy Coutinho. And if people say, well, we've lost Neymar, but just say, well, don't worry. We've got the next Neymar, so to speak, not to put too much pressure on anyone, coming through the academy. So we don't need to spend 120 million on someone who's had a couple of really good seasons at Liverpool. And that's no disrespect to Coutinho, who's an incredible player. But Barcelona need to have that confidence in their players so then players can step up and think, they believe in me. Because if no one believes in you, they need to go somewhere where they do. And I think that's where they are. Whereas Real Madrid, whether you love it or hate it, they have their system. It's well established. Everybody knows. And those young kids, they're happy to play a season in Real Madrid. Sure, it does them a world of good. And they might have to go away to come back. Might have to go away and come back a couple of times. But eventually, if they're good enough, they'll get a chance. Because the Real Madrid fans do love a local hero, someone like Asensio as well. He was someone who would get a lot more time than a player who's come from abroad, for example. And I'm not saying Asensio came through, obviously, Real Madrid's academy, because he didn't. Obviously, he came through Mallorca, another famed footballing academy. But, you know, from being Spanish, they want and they take a great deal of pride of having representatives in the national team. So if you're a young Spanish star, that's why I think a lot of them choose to go to Real Madrid over a Barcelona, is because they know that the fans will be pushing them to give them a chance. And even if it is someone like Llorente, who obviously went away and had a really good season on loan, it comes in really well. Carvajal is another example. He obviously went to Bayer Leverkusen, had a fantastic, brought him back, or paid the buyout clause. They always keep these things in, which again is smart business. I'm not sure how common they'll be long-term because I'd imagine the bigger the club you sell them to, the bigger the buyback clause they'll want. But there is at least a sense of structure with Real Madrid. There's a stepping away somewhat of the Galactico signings. We'll see what happens with Mbappe. I don't know if that suddenly becomes an impossibility now with the current crisis. But Barcelona do seem directional. You feel like they need a new person in charge to basically say, look, this is what I want us to do. Without the pressure of saying, well, you need to win everything, which I think Valverde was always under. And it's true of any big club, but an understanding that it's going to be a transitional period, a bit like Real Madrid fans that are accepting somewhat, they're not always going to win the league. They would love to win the league every year, but they accept sometimes, you know, that just the consistency is lacking. And I think that for Barcelona, they need somebody who's going to be a bit more honest and say, look, We've let it go too long. We need to focus on the future. They're going to be a little bit more inconsistent. They're going to need time. They're going to need your support. Let's back them and let's see if we can create a new generation of talent that everybody can be proud of, and one that's not going to cost hundreds of millions to create because you've already got a good chunk of that talent at home. So we'll see. There's a lot of interesting sort of secondary stories to come out of La Liga, I think, because of this crisis. And it's going to cause a lot of clubs that were paying far too much money to reprioritize their main objectives and where they're going.
So let's talk a little bit about Valencia now. What do you think about their season so far? Marcelino left the club pretty early in September with no good reason, in my opinion, at least. And then Celades replaced him. They got eliminated in Copa del Rey by Granada in quarterfinals. And they are seventh in La Liga now. And they're eliminated from UCL against Atalanta, a club playing in UCL for the first time. So what do you think about that?
Well, unfortunately, it's very Valencia. That anyone who's followed La Liga semi-recently, or at least in the last 15 to 20 years, knows that any success is met with, it's almost like a poison chalice, that there's got to be something bad that comes with it. Maslin Osakian was something which felt unnecessary, but I think for the people here, at least, you saw it coming. There was a huge disconnect between Peter Lim and his people in charge and how Marcelino wanted to run the club alongside Matteo Alemanni. And there was no middle ground. You know, it reached the point, I think, when Marcelino did his sort of press conference type thing. It's very unusual. But he held like an impromptu press conference after being sacked, because obviously the club didn't give him a chance to say goodbye. And he basically said that he felt he was sacked for winning the Copa del Rey, because Peter Lim had told him, forget the Copa del Rey. We don't want to win it. All that matters is qualifying for the Champions League. And he says that when they won the Copa del Rey against Barcelona, obviously, which was a huge moment for all the fans here, that they didn't get a message to say congratulations. And when they met in August for the first of two meetings, which the second one didn't go anywhere near as well as the first one, and the first one didn't go well either, was basically just say congratulations on making the Champions League, not congratulations on winning their first trophy in years. No, it was just that money keeps going in and he can keep doing it. And there was huge discrepancies of, I think in the first meeting, all parties agreed that Maxi Gomez would come in from Celta Vigo and that Santi Mina would go the opposite way. But then everything after that seemed to be a tit-for-tat battle, and nobody was on the same page, whether that was by design, whether it was trying to force somebody to say, well, okay, I'm going to walk, or the other person saying, well, you're going to have to sack me if you don't want me to offer my players. And they had a second meeting, and again, I think it was Marcelino wanted Rafinha, but Peter Lim said, look, he's got injury problems. I want you to play our young players. Our young players are good enough, and then we're going to sell them, because his idea is basically invest in youth. When they do well, sell them for profit, and that would be the long-term stability that the club needs. Then obviously the end of the transfer window was another horrible showing in terms of unity, because Peter Lim basically tried to sell Rodrigo Moreno to Atletico Madrid, which were, in theory, the team that Valencia would be trying to compete against, because you dismiss the top two for now and you focus on, well, Atletico Madrid, the weakest of the three. If we're trying to break into that sort of monopoly of teams, then we have to go, which Marcelino said, well, if we sell him, we're going to have to sort of revise our objective for the season, because you can't expect me to get top four if you're selling my best striker to one of our main rivals. And that was essentially him saying, sack me. And Peter Lim said, well, all right, sack it. As for Celades, it's difficult. I think it's always difficult to replace a successful and popular coach. There would be bright moments, but I don't think there's been anything that makes you think the team's better without Marcelino. But again, it's a thankless task, but he's another one of those players, one of those managers and coaches that's been picked by Peter Lim. So he's going to have a little bit more time than most, but it's difficult to envisage him ever winning over the fans. And that's nothing to do with necessarily him, but there's a lot of resentment towards how Peter Lim runs the club, even though on the face of things, it looks quite well, quite successful, you know, two seasons of Champions League. Atalanta, I mean, again, to go back to the point, I can't talk about how well they're doing. Obviously, I've seen them in the league table, and they've had some really impressive results after a horrible start to the Champions League. I think they lose the first two or three games, and then they came back and won everything. They're a really impressive young side. I think, obviously, for Valencia, though, the game was lost in Italy when they got destroyed. They had to play extremely open at home. And again, without your supporters there, which it's a huge influence, and it's not an excuse, because I think, obviously, circumstances dictated that you shouldn't have any fans then. It was the right decision. But it was a huge factor. I think if it was sort of 2-1 and you go back to the Mestalla, anyone who's ever been there knows that the atmosphere when the fans are all up for it is second to none, or should I say it's up there with the best teams in Spain. They could generate one-off atmospheres better than anybody else. But it all fell a bit flat, and because the result was so poor away from home, it basically left them with no margin for error. And as soon as Atalanta scored one, that was game over.
Yeah. To me, Peter Lim is very much like Mike Ashley of Newcastle. it seems that they run the club the same way. I'm really waiting for someone to buy Valencia from Peter Lim, because I think that they have a really good potential to become a really huge club.
Yeah, I mean, there are similarities. I think as much as even the most ardent of Valencia fan, I think comparing to Peter, Mike Ashley is, I can understand it, but there are obviously extremes to that. I think Peter Lim has spent money, but it became, I think, very abundantly clear that he wasn't, as much as he talked about a long-term vision for Valencia, there really the only long-term vision was buy it as cheap as possible, restructure the debts, which made a huge difference. Don't get me wrong, the club might not even be here if his deal had not gone through. Finish off the new stadium, which fortunately, again, was nothing to do necessarily with him because that was a previous regime that made such a horror show of trying to design a stadium, which if you've ever been to the Mestalla is one of the, whilst it's old, after a new lick of paint, it looks incredible. It felt unnecessary. And there was a lot of promises, but again, the cynic in you says this was just said to get fans on side. And the reality is because he paid so little for the club that if somebody said, well, we'll double your money or triple your money, it'd snap the hand off. Because he's a businessman at the end of the day. He's not a Valencia fan. He's not deep-rooted in tradition. He spends very little time over here. The only time you'll see him at a game, generally speaking, is when they play Real Madrid. I think the last two times it's been to the Mestalla was for that. Or he's trying to sell players. Obviously, Paco Alcácer was the one that when he came over and was like, I'm taking Paco to Barcelona because they've offered this money. And then Rodrigo Moreno. And he is a bit like Mike Ashley in the sense that when things are going well, he wants a more hands-on approach and he likes things done his way. So that's why I don't mean to be disrespectful to tell her this because is that so little time in the job, but you have to be a yes man essentially to last a long time because Marcelino did the most that you can realistically expect from Valencia. He won a trophy. He beat, the league winners in the final and he qualified for the Champions League twice with so many limitations financially that you can't expect anything more. And if he was not unsackable, then nobody is, unless you go for someone like a Mourinho, who obviously not available at the moment, but then would he be enticed by a project at Valencia where there's less money available with, the La Liga title is not the same as in the 90s when Benitez came through. The money is and the gulf in quality is so big now and so vast that it's difficult. I do hope whoever potentially buys Valencia. I mean, now it's obviously more difficult with the financial situation. But there's a club there that's huge. Similar to, like you say, in Newcastle, there's a huge fan base, passionate fan base that love their club. They've got an academy system, which basically, either depending on which side you look at it, either poaches or gathers the best talent in this region, which is a vast region. And if you're good enough, you get picked up by Valencia. And that's why so many talented players have come through the academy there. And it's difficult. I say on the face of it, you can say, well, Peter Lim wants to invest in young players. What's wrong with that? But then you've got someone like Ferran Torres, who's had an incredible last couple of seasons, especially this year up until the break. And he's sort of saying, well, you've got to pay me like I'm one of your best players. Because he knows that there's offers from other European countries that are going to triple his wages. What reason is there to stay? And what is the direction of Valencia? What is their objective for the season? Is it just qualify for the Champions League, which is good for the accounts, but as fans, is that really what you care about? I guarantee if you asked any Valencia fan what was their lasting memory of the previous season, it was winning the Copa del Rey, not qualifying again for the Champions League.
So what do you think about Sociedad's season? I mean, they've done a great job under Imanol. They have a very entertaining style of play, and they have the youngest squad of the league. What do you think about them?
Well, Real Sociedad, I think, have been one of those teams similar to Valencia in sort of the more modern Liga history, that have always threatened to explode into the scene with an investment in youth. Obviously, they differ from their Basque neighbors who focus entirely on players who were born in that region. But Real Sociedad have got a real hotbed of young talent, and they give it a chance, and they allow it. And I think players that go there know that if a big team comes in from and they want to move, the club will sell. They're not going to play hardball, which obviously if you go to an athletic club, they say, well, you have to pay the buyout clause. And that impedes it, because you know that if, unless you really love playing for Athletic Club and you have no ambition to go anywhere else, which again is perfectly fine, you're stuck there. Whereas at Real Sociedad, there's a more understanding of, well, look, we'll give you the platform to showcase your ability. Maybe you come from a bigger team. Maybe you've had injuries. Maybe you've not really had a chance. Or maybe your parent team's not playing you, so you can go on loan. And I think they play incredible football. Like I say, it's fast, it's attacking. It's not perfect because obviously they're not top of the table, but they're not pretending to be. What they're trying to do is entertain their fans. They've thankfully got rid of that terrible running track around the Anoeta, which was awful. And now it is a proper football stadium as well. They also have a huge fan base. I know everybody loves Athletic Club's history and the style of football and their new stadium. But Real Sociedad is a big club as well. You know, they have a huge history. And it's nice to see these teams come up there. And like I say, sometimes it's circumstance, like William Jose. He wanted to go to, obviously, Tottenham in was it summer or January? It's difficult to remember now.
It was both, actually. January, it was more...
Yeah, Spurs needed a striker, and it was rumoured, and he said, I want to leave. And then when it didn't go through, during this period, obviously, Isaac got a chance, and he took it, and he looks... I'm not going to use the term of the Swedish Ibra because it's not true. He's a very different player. But, you know, he's such a talented guy. And for circumstances, got a chance. But instead of a negative for the club, it's turned into a positive. And that's it. And it's also sticking with a similar team. Basically, you can name Real Sociedad's 11 every single week. And that continuity and the cohesion of that group is incredible. Whether they could mix it with a European campaign at the same time, well, I'm sure they'll happily cross that bridge when they get to it. But yeah, they're a fantastic side, similar to like Getafe. Obviously, not the same in terms of visually appealing, but Getafe, any team, any underdog that overachieves or breaks the status quo is always admired by the neutrals. And I think if you can play good football on top of it, well, even better. And Real Sociedad definitely fit into that category.
So what would you do? What would you do if you were Odegaard? Would you stay another season in Sociedad or would you go back to Madrid?
I think it depending on obviously the clauses in the contract, I think it depends on what Real Madrid are going to offer him. If they're going to say, look, Luka's going, you're going to be our number one guy in midfield. Isco's not going to replace you. We're going to give you, I don't know, no coach ever said it, but say, well, 10, 15 games to establish yourself in our team. If it doesn't work, you can go in January back to Real Sociedad or somewhere else. But it has to come down to playing time. I think a lot of people wrote him off, which again is probably one of the drawbacks of modern football, is that we're desperately obsessed with instant success and continuous success. And as soon as somebody falls below that bar, we have to write him off and they're a fraud or get rid of him. No, the guy is still such a young guy, and he's finally getting. He had obviously a really productive year in Holland. I'm again not going to pretend that I watched it, but from people who do watch that league, they all said you can see that this guy is different quality to the rest of the division. That he's playing at a level higher. He came to Real Sociedad. Obviously, he's got a coach that believes in him, a team that believes in him. He believes in himself, which is also crucial. So I think it comes down purely to playing time. Obviously, Real Sociedad are never going to be able to afford whatever Real Madrid would ask, which I don't think they're even trying to. They're just happy to keep him an extra year on loan. But it comes down to that. If Real Madrid say, look, we're going to build the team, or at least our midfield around you, then you stay at Real Madrid and you give it a chance to see if you can become that world-class star that so many expect him to be. But if Real Madrid say, well, look, you're probably not going to play every week, you're going to have to bide your time, well, then I would suggest that he goes somewhere in a good team. And again, if they qualify for Europe, which, again, I know everything is very much subject to change, but if they did qualify for Europe, it would be a good test for him as well, to even if it's the Europa League, even if it's not the Champions League, any type of European football on a regular basis is all going to serve him really well for the future. So I think playing time is the number one priority. And after that, if it's at Real Madrid, well, then obviously you choose Real Madrid. But if it's not, well, then you go wherever you feel happiest and where they're going to believe in you.
Okay, Andrew, do you have any final thoughts before I wrap up our interview?
Any final thoughts? What about in particular? Is there anything that you feel we've not covered or that you
Let me ask you a yes or no question. Do you think they would be able to finish this season?
Do I think they will be able to, or do I think they will?
They would be able to.
I think now that the sort of stages are in place, we all know it's going to finish. It might finish in a bigger mess than it started. It might feel like a really good idea at the beginning of June and feel like a horrible one by the time we reach July. But I don't see, bar a, obviously I hope it doesn't happen, a huge outbreak again in Spain, the season has to finish. I think the big question really is, when will next season begin? And that is a much more difficult one to answer because there's so many permutations and we have no idea. Again, I know we touched on it briefly, but where do you fit the Europa League and Champions League in there? How do you not? Do you play all in one place? Do you play all in one country, all in one stadium? Is that fair? What about the teams that have played one leg? What about the teams that have played two legs and say, well, hey, we didn't have fans at all? There is not going to be a perfect solution. And I think the season will finish. I think now that the things are in place, it has to finish. The bigger question will be more what happens next year. And then how do you then bring it back? If you do change the structure to fit the World Cup, how do you then move it back to fit to the regular season afterwards? But I suppose a problem for 2020 or 2022 or 2023 is a lot more palpable than a problem for 2020 or 2021. So that would be the only thing. I think bar another outbreak, either in Europe or particularly in Spain, La Liga will finish. Will finish with an asterisk next to it, like all leagues. I'm not sure if it will be memorable for the right reasons. But I think it's essential now that we've reached this point to just finish it. I think there's a lot of apathy towards football. Even in a difficult time, we love football. It's a place that we escape from all our daily chores and worries and pains and turmoil. And football can be the greatest thing and the worst thing in the world on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon. But I think we all just want the season to finish and hope the next season is sort of like the new start, the new normal, and hopefully with fans, you know, if it can be done safely, which we'll touch upon briefly. Obviously, Real Sociedad and Athletic Club are in their Copa del Rey final, yeah. And they have both said and stressed that they don't want to play it until fans are allowed to attend. The RFEF have agreed and said that's not a problem because they've even wavered the European place, because obviously the winner of the domestic cup gets that. And that means that the game could take place this year, or it could take place even next year, which sounds funny that we're talking about it, but I think that just shows again that football is about winning things, and it's not about qualifying for a tournament that you're going to throw away when your league form starts to fall down. No, a Copa del Rey final is massive for those sets of fans, and it would be nice hopefully if it's again safely to do so, to see that event be the first game, whether it's the last extended part of this season or just in the preseason of the next one, to see a full stadium watching Real Sociedad Athletic Club competing for the Copa del Rey.
Thank you so much for your time, Andrew. Everyone go and follow Andrew on Twitter. It's @GaffneyVLC. His tweets are amazing and always to the point. Also, if you're a Football Manager fan, he's your guy. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're starting a new series named The Idiot Guide to Football Manager 20, right?
Yeah, that is the plan. Unfortunately, like a lot of people during this lockdown and with work being reduced, I've turned to an old flame in Football Manager and I've played far too many hours that I will not disclose, because unlike previous versions of Championship Manager where it used to tell you like a little status of where you should clean your clothes or maybe you should go outside. You remember what this looks like? I've played a lot of hours, so I like to think that I can at least share some of my knowledge with the people who are maybe joining late to the renaissance with probably the most nostalgic and fun computer game of my youth.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you a lot. And thank you to all of you who watch our interview. Don't forget to press the subscribe button. We would have more interviews for you that you don't want to miss. Thank you.